That's right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Summit Cast. We are thrilled and excited that you made the decision to join us for today's episode. We have been sitting around after a team meeting just discussing several topics regarding the pre-COVID work environment versus the post-COVID work environment, work ethic across multiple industries, both in the medical field and on the executive side of things. And I am here with America's headhunter, the one and only Chuck Jeter. Chuck, how are you, man?
Doing good, Doug. How are you doing today?
Very good. And we just thought we would take a few moments since we've been having such a great discussion, and we would throw some thoughts out there on pre-COVID versus post-COVID. Chuck, I know that you have worked at Summit, we've seen more than 5,000 active searches, and you've worked with people in various industries, and especially in the medical industry, in just about every specialty and subspecialty, mid-levels, nurses, you name it. And if there's anybody that has a unique perspective on how COVID has changed the landscape of the work environment, I would think it would be you. So, Chuck, what are your thoughts on the pre-COVID work environment?
Well, so nobody saw COVID coming and the shutdown coming. So really pre-COVID, you can, you know, as we're telling, you know, our perspective, you know, it was normal. You know, it was kind of normal as far as, you know, economy, that sort of thing.
Nobody knows how to prepare for a shutdown until you walk through a shutdown, right?
That's a fact.
I know that was unprecedented. I mean, at least in my lifetime. That's the first thing that I've ever been a part of. I have noticed, though, not just in working with people looking for jobs, but in working with people that are in recruiting for our in-house teams, I've noticed a dramatic shift just in people's work ethic and their perspective when it comes to the work-life balance. And maybe we're just cut from a different cloth. For those of you that haven't been around recruiters tend to work more, I would say, than the average person. Wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah,
a fair
for sure.
Statement?
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to be successful, yeah, for sure.
If you're a good recruiter tends to work a little bit more than the average person. You're usually on the phone early and late, and you kind of work with different people on different schedules. But with this new emphasis on mental health and the work-life balance, that's been challenging. What has been your experience working with candidates that are looking for careers in the post-COVID world, Chuck?
Well, just, you know, from talking to the employers and talking to, you know, the people, the job seekers, you know, the employer's perspective is that, you know, they have a job, they need it done. You know, they're willing to pay X for it. And, you know, there's this kind of, folks on LinkedIn and these influencers, they tend to look to pit the job seeker against the employee.
That's exactly right.
That, job seekers are being mistreated. And, you know, granted, there is always some of that, you know, and there's, you know, so if somebody's had a bad situation, then yes, of course, that definitely happens. But, you know, as a community, you know, working community, just, you know, the employers, you know, they're trying to keep their doors open. You know, they're trying to make a profit. You know, the candidates coming out, you know, a lot of times they're going to be new graduates. You know, they're going to need some
sure.
additional system training, that sort of thing. And so, you know, they look at these places and, you know, with the kind of work-life balance narrative going out there, I mean, I get that. Yeah, man, if you have a family, you want to hang out with your family, make some money, you want to spend the money, you want to go on vacation, you know, but we're really kind of made to work hard. I mean,
sure.
COVID has made it to where if you're, you know, I mean, no dig on anybody that can work part-time and that be enough. But, you know, I screen people on a daily basis, and they, you know, want to know if we have a place they can work one day, or, you know, and this is not like in addition to, we do get that too. Sure. And hats off to those people that want to work extra, but you know, I don't still see how people can make it on the one day, but that's none of my business. We don't have anything for them.
Sure.
But, nothing's changed as far as what works and what doesn't work. I mean, if you are going to go into, you know, a place of business, I mean, they were there before you were.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, they were being successful before you were. Can you add to the wood pile? Absolutely. And they want to, you know, that's the goal, to bring somebody on to be part of the team. But, you know, going in with the idea that they already owe you, and
That's exactly right.
You know, it's not a way to pave the road to success, because even if it's a negative work environment, you know, we just tell people to do their best while they look for another job. And, you know, if you're the employee that everybody wants, then, you know, then you're going to get, you know, brought up a notch, and
sure,
you're going to find what you want, you know.
Well, let's be honest. Employers tend to cater a little bit more to their producers, and nobody wants to admit that. Everybody wants to, they want to believe that everything is purely equal, but I've seen it in industry after industry. If you have someone that is in the top 5% of producers, and they are getting in there, and they are doing what it takes, they are going to be treated differently than someone that is pulling down the entire atmosphere of the team. They're going to be treated differently than a non-producer. And that's the part that nobody wants, to be labeled a non-producer in this day, in this age that we live in. Everybody wants to come in with the exact same treatment as a senior partner that has been a part of an organization for many, many years. They don't want to, quote, pay the dues, unquote, that people have to do to be able to live the life that they want. But unfortunately, that's romantic, and that's a fantastic concept for the candidate, but that is just not realistic, and that's not sustainable. So one of the things in coaching different people that are looking at new careers and career changes, one of the things that we're intentional about mentioning on my side of the equation is, hey, listen, whenever you start a new job, it's not the time to focus on the work-life balance. Chuck, you hit the nail on the head. I heard you in a team meeting say, hey, when you start a new job, it is a work-work balance. You have to get in there, and you have to
prove yourself. Yeah, prove yourself. You have to, you know, you have to earn the, you know, the position you want, the freedom you want, that sort of thing. And, you know, and I kind of do see it. My perspective is from wanting to someone that, you know, I never wanted to go be a corporate guy and work for, you know, somebody my whole life and punch a clock and that sort of thing. And so my perspective is different. However, you know, it is very important when you are working for someone else that you treat that like it's your own business.
Absolutely.
And that you do for them what you would do in your own business to make it successful. Because if you ask me, it's impossible to be a terrible, you know, to not take care of somebody else's business when you have the opportunity, and then to go start your business and be successful.
Oh, that is a excellent principle. Now, I know that I like to go to church, and one of the parables that they talk about in church is this parable of this man that had 10 talents, and he gave 5 to one servant, a couple to another one, and then one to a third servant. And he was excited because the first one went out and did something with his talents and made something, and then the second one did, but the third servant went and buried it. He did not treat that like that was something that he had ownership of, and because of that, in the story, the owner didn't look favorably upon that. If you don't treat something like you have ownership of it, then you know, you will, you're missing a fantastic opportunity to grow as an organization. So that, you know, that's a great segue. We're talking about work ethic here. What are your thoughts on work ethic, Chuck?
So, you know, that's a work ethic is very important. It's something that has to be learned.
Sure.
You know, and first of all, you know, comes the desire. Not everybody has the same desire. I mean, you know, some people, you know, they want this and that, and you know, they're happy, and you know, other people, they're just very motivated, very driven, and you know, they want more, and that's fine too. You know, you mentioned you like to go to church. I do too myself. And you know, the one sermon I remember was that I'm kind of thinking about right now is, you know, something in the Bible that says, you know, it literally is in there, and it says, mind your own business, you know. And so whenever I worked for companies, I didn't look over at what the other guy was getting, what he was doing, you know, all those things seem to shake out. If somebody,
sure,
you know, and you know, actually, if somebody's getting special treatment and they're the top producer, and they're getting to take 2-hour lunches, which top producers don't do that, but I'm just using this as an example. You know, if they're getting all these special privileges, well, instead of demonizing that person and alienating them and making myself somebody they don't want to be around, I want to learn from that person. I want to know what they're doing because I want what they have. I don't want their stuff. I want to know, how did you get, you know, I'd like the company to look at me and say, you know, we don't care if you come in late. We don't care if you, you know, take an extra 30 minutes for lunch. It's because those people, if they come in, it seems like they come in late, but you didn't know that they were there till 9:30 last night.
Absolutely. No, I think that if everybody has the goal of being an indispensable employee, someone that the company cannot function without, everybody wins. Whenever you're trying to make sure that you take care of business, that you're billing the things that you need to be billing, that you're collecting the things that you need to be collecting, and regardless of the industry, let's say that you work in the service industry. I know that one of the companies that I was serving as a fractional CMO for at one point, they were, I think that they were probably producing $7 to $10 million a year as a HVAC company. They had one guy, and that guy, they would let the guy come in at 10:30 or 11 o'clock, and they never said two words to him. And the reason was, this guy consistently, regardless of whether he came in early or came in late, he was producing more than $1 million a year for that company. And so he received special treatment. Whereas, you know, if you've got a guy that's motivated to take extra long breaks and not necessarily trying to upsell people or anything like that, obviously they're going to be treated a little bit differently. So Chuck, in working with all of these people throughout the COVID, the pre-COVID and the post-COVID world, how have you seen candidates' priorities change? And what are your concerns about candidate priorities?
Well, so it appears that, you know, with the shutdown for the year, it appears that, you know, hey, maybe, you know, we as don't really need as much to make it. But, you know, that's what nobody's, you know, taking into consideration is all the free money that was printed and given, sure, given out. And, you know, you know, a lot of that stuff, you know, paid for, you know, the loans that were given out and all that stuff. I mean,
there's no such thing as free money.
It's yeah,
come
yeah.
from somewhere.
Well, so all that stuff's drying up, and it's going to dry up. And, you know, the bad habits were developed, you know, and I think that, unless, you know, people start setting goals and start, you know, dreaming dreams and, you know, having a vision as far as, you know, what they, you know, moving forward, that, you know, that some people are going to find themselves in places they really don't want to be. And, you know, the in the medical industry, if you have a skill set, so there's such a shortage. I mean, you know, if anybody wonders what industry to go into, sure. You know, medical is, you know, at least at this point, that's...
Yeah, we just were talking to another one of our clients the other day, and they said that there are just not enough residents and fellows coming out of training to replace those that are retiring. So there is, we are on the cusp of yet another medical shortage.
Well, and then they're also given more responsibility to, you know, say, you know, PAs, nurse practitioners, that sort of thing, which, you know, a lot of them, you know, can handle it. There's, you know, obviously.
So I know that we work with a lot of different industries, but since you did mention that, how have you seen COVID change? Could you talk a little bit about how it's changed the responsibility delegation? Because I know that there are a lot of PAs and nurse practitioners that we work with that are doing things that used to not be in their portfolio. And that's like commonplace now. Just like I think on the last episode, you were talking about how just the amount of reads that the average radiologist is doing now on a regular basis has skyrocketed. How have you seen the delegation to mid-levels? If I know that's not that phrase is kind of frowned upon sometimes, but how have you seen the delegation change since COVID?
Well, there's a lot of standards, a lot of laws, a lot of restrictions. I mean, they're, you know, they're not doing anything. They're not supposed to be doing anything they shouldn't be doing. But, you know, as far as like, you know, are they physicians? You know, they don't have as much training. You know, are they, you know, as valuable to the organization as a physician? Absolutely. I mean, there's, you know, nurses are, you know, they're probably some of the hardest working people.
Absolutely.
You know, working 12-hour shifts, and, you know, that's, you know, 3-12s, and, you know, that's a different podcast. But, you know, when they become nurse practitioners, you know, the pay is sometimes not as good as when they're an RN. But as far as delegation, I mean, you know, there's, and I think it's probably a good idea, you know, just, you know, to, you know, some of these, you know, urgent care is popping up everywhere. Yeah. You know, a nurse practitioner, a
literally
PA,
on every corner here in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex.
Right. They can easily handle, you know, patients. The thing again, too, is the volume of the patients. You know, there's just so many patients. You know, COVID, during COVID, you know, we all thought that the patient volumes and things like that were going to go down, and they did for some practices, you know, but we just kind of migrated to, you know, the different, you know, specialties and practices. And I mean, urgent care, they were just, you know, with all the testing and all that stuff, they were just buried.
Sure.
Well,
you're kind of circling around. One of the things I was wanting to chat with you about is how COVID affected recruiting and hiring, and the challenging nature, and what solutions as a recruiter we have to offer in regards to the challenges that were produced by COVID.
Yeah, so recruiting is a very it's a very mature industry now.
Absolutely.
And you know, so you know, there's a lot of in-house recruiters. There's you know, a lot of people doing their, you know, doing their own recruiting and stuff, and hats off to them. You know, the social media, the, you know, we come from a generation of just cold calling.
Absolutely.
You know, those days are, I mean, cold calling is actually almost counterproductive. It's just with all the, you know, contacts through the emails, the social media sites and that sort of thing. But recruiting, I mean, it looks like it's here to stay. And, you know, there's, you know, a lot of changes, but those that can roll with the changes, you know, they're going to do very well. I mean, there's, some people hire for process, you know, just to handle the process, and then some people need the headhunting. And,
sure.
You know, so we offer both.
Yeah, so I know that when it comes to recruiting in the post-COVID world, there are some things that are a little bit different than they were beforehand. But whether you are coming straight out of training, or whether you're seasoned and you've been in the middle of your career, maybe even approaching the sunset of your career, work ethic is something that sometimes it can be taught, but most of the time it's caught. I know when I first started working here at Summit, it had to have been 2005, 2006. And there was kind of a mantra because, you know, everybody had allergies and stuff going around. And I remember walking into a meeting one time and some people were just, you know, not feeling great. It was obvious. And I think it was you, Chuck, that said, "Aren't you glad that we can work when we don't feel good?" And I think that, you know, not that you want to come in when you have the flu and just sneeze all over everybody, but I think that, you know, whenever we view all of these things as roadblocks to why we can't do something, we miss out on the opportunity to do some amazing things. So, Chuck, as we wrap this this episode up, are there any parting thoughts that you want to share with anybody regarding recruiting in the post-COVID world?
Well, you know, just, you know, make, you know, so right now it's a candidate market, candidate-driven, job seeker-driven market. You know, that's, and I think that a lot of the job seekers, they sense that and they understand that and know that. You know, it always changes. You know, it's the pendulum swings. And so, you know, just, you know, we're looking to work with the, you know, the top 20-30% of people that, you know, for our clients, and meaning that, I mean, we'll, you know, anybody that's, you know, willing to, you know, work hard, actually go the extra mile, you know, almost the opposite of what, you know, we're seeing in this culture. Just that's who we're looking for, and that's kind of the that's kind of what our clients look like and what they're looking for. And you know, of course, we understand taking vacations, we understand taking breaks, we understand all that, we understand getting paid, you know, for what you do, we understand all that. But you know, just, you know, what has always worked works, and that's, you know, to do a little bit more than everybody else, you know, just, you know, be courteous, kind, you know, just respectful, you know, and don't be entitled. And
that's it, right,
you know,
there, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, nothing will throw a wet blanket on the fire faster than showing up to start at a new organization with a, I almost call it a spirit of entitlement, because if someone has this air about them, if they see, if they genuinely believe that they're entitled, it usually makes them a spectacular person to work with. Everybody enjoys it so very much. And so, you know, this is just a challenge from the team here at Summit to make sure that you're teachable when you're coming out of training, that you have a great attitude and wonderful work ethic. Hey, if you need some help looking for a job, or if you need some help with recruiting, we work all medical specialties and we work with executives as well, and we'd love to have your business. Feel free to give us a shout. The number here is 817-483-4300, or you can visit our website on the medical side at hiresps.com, or the executive side at summitxec.com. Thanks a lot and have a fantastic day. Oh, do you have something you want to say, Chuck?
Yeah. And I want to say, if you know, if there's anybody that wants some job coaching, or just has a question, or, you know, about an interview somewhere else, or maybe a question about, you know, about something in an agreement, feel free to call us. We'll be glad to, you know, answer any questions you have and help you, walk you through that process and help you, even if it's not, you know, somewhere we're going to place you. You know, we just would be happy to, you know, get to know you and,
absolutely,
maybe
it's
work
great
with
to
you
have
in the
a fresh
future
set of eyes looking at something too. Well, thank you so much for your time, and we'll see you at the next episode.